Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined once again after a hiatus by Pete Sampson, or with Pete Sampson here from The Athletic. It's Monday, January 9th, and since our last podcast 6 days ago, a lot has happened to Notre Dame's roster. Sam Hartman, the quarterback at Wake Forest, will be the quarterback at Notre Dame in 2023. Thomas Harper, a nickel, we'll talk more about his role at Notre Dame, but a nickel slash safety from Oklahoma State, will be on the Irish squad as well, as will DJ Brown. Late last night, we found out that DJ Brown will be returning for a sixth year, but one player that will not be is Justin Adamalola. Notre Dame really needed that defensive end to come back for the 2023 season. Like his twin, Jason Adamalola, he will be entering his name in the draft. So, Tim O'Malley, let's start with you and your comments on Sam Hartman on the Notre Dame roster in 2023.
Yeah, it was one of the top tier possible adds you could get at the position. They absolutely needed to upgrade that position. And now it's an enviable spot now. If Tyler Buchner remains in tow, as we currently expect, that's a quality backup coming off the bench for Sam Hartman. I think that Notre Dame could, especially with another year to develop for Buchner, it'll be interesting to see how he handles the situation after the spring when the competition is officially flushed out as opposed to on paper. I think they really could use Buchner in this backup role. Otherwise, you're one snap away from having a worse quarterback situation than you had last year. So they really need to convince Buchner to stay. And I think the good news is, I don't know if we said it officially or not, Tim, Buchner gained a year of eligibility when the season ended because he only played 3 games. So there's reason to talk him into staying other than just being in school at Notre Dame. Is 3 years of eligibility left starting this season.
Pete, welcome back.
Sam Hartman. Yeah, I was following this news from the Mexican jungle where they had Wi-Fi, somewhat inexplicably. But yeah, it was... that Notre Dame will now have a quarterback, maybe for the first time in a while, where he will not be described as 1/11th of the offense or just do your job, because that's not how college football or football at the highest level works. You can't have a quarterback just do their job or be 1/11th the offense and like score at a very high level. So I think Sam Hartman has a lot of, not to get all 24/7 here, but like some dude qualities about him. I mean, I think he's somebody people will want to follow very quickly. He's a 24-year-old man. I don't even know what there isn't to like about this. I like everything about it. I think at The Athletic, he was our number one overall player in the transfer portal. So, I mean, Notre Dame hit at a very, very high level here. It's, it's Marcus Freeman, Tommy Reese. Both of them got this done. I think it is a home run, sort of undersells it.
Yeah, I think it puts Notre Dame's offense front and center. And we'll talk about the defense and some of the issues that they face. O'Malley and I talked about that, Pete, last week, The issues on the D-line. And at safety, but offensively, this gives Notre Dame an opportunity to really up the ante in terms of scoring, total offense, balance of their offense. We have some questions in the second segment about how this is going to impact the running game. I just think it gives you a much better balanced offense. It makes the receivers better. He's going to play behind a much better offensive line. Again, we have questions about that, but Sam Hartman, with his nearly 13,000 passing yards and 110 touchdown passes, which is an ACC record, and he has a chance. Not sure he's not in the ACC anymore. I was going to say.
Will those count towards the record teams?
Yeah, Philip Rivers is the guy that has the most passing yards in ACC history, but No, those won't count. But huge for Notre Dame. This, you know, this isn't a surprise. We've been talking about this for weeks that we thought it was going to happen going into the announcement last week. We were locked and loaded and ready to make the announcement or ready to unleash all of our stories whenever there's a commitment to Notre Dame, whether it's high school, a high school player or a transfer. And so it's huge for Notre Dame. Thomas Harper, I don't want to overplay Thomas Harper, but I do want to give his due, give the proper due to him. He's small, but man, the kid is a hitter. When you watch Thomas Harper play, nobody tries harder to bring an offensive player down than Thomas Harper. Now, a lot of times, you know, at 5'10", 5'11", 180 pounds, he has to wrestle him to the ground, but this dude will fight and scratch and claw to get a guy to a ground. And I get a guy to the ground. And I said this in the, in our film review, that he almost plays too physical for his own good. He played in 48 games in 4 years. So obviously he was on the field a lot, but he missed five games in 2022. And I don't believe he played in the Fiesta Bowl. So it must've been an injury situation because he was an integral part of their special teams right from the beginning. So I like him a lot. I hope he can get through a season because he's so physical. Notre Dame wants him as a corner. He's listed as a safety, or I'm sorry, as a nickel. He's listed as a safety nickel, but I think Notre Dame's role for him is nickel, especially in light of the loss of Tariq Bracey, who was really mostly terrific for the last two seasons at nickel.
Yeah, he's a different kind of nickel, but I mean, if you look a little closer too, he allowed 5.4 yards per catch this year in a half a year playing. He allowed only 9 points something the previous season, playing a lot over the slot in the box. They lined him up in a few different places. That's a good number. Now, Tariq Bracey, as good as he was actually underrated in terms of how he played the short screen pass and played the run. He was tremendous against it. So just because he's physical, I don't know if it's a massive upgrade in terms of playing the run and playing those screen passes, but he'll be good at that as well. The best thing about him, Tim, is I still think that puts them in a four-man rotation at safety and a four-man rotation at corner, which is good when you don't have great players. They don't have great safeties. They have DJ Brown, who knows what he's doing. We probably don't give him enough credit, Tim and I, when our top 40 comes out here. I almost didn't have him in my top 40, so that would be me not giving him enough credit.
He made it. After last night's announcement, he made it. But I think, you know, he was the number four tackler on the team, and I realize a lot of those times.
Yeah, and I don't even mean, I just mean, like, we don't know every time the ball does not go 25 yards down the field right. Because he's there. So
and I've
he's
always not said that
better
about
than teams. The he's better not be better than Adon Shuler is going to be, but he's better than he would be this year when there's giant checks to be made in when you're playing against Ohio State and Clemson and USC, and DJ Brown actually knows the check. So not to get off topic, but DJ Brown's a topic, right? DJ Brown and Harper are back because of that. They have four safeties plus the freshman.
Well, right. I think let me just interject this, Pete. I apologize. DJ Brown, the frustrating part with DJ Brown is the missed tackles and then the missed opportunities on interceptions, which again, if you go back to the early days when he first started making contributions, he had opportunities at interceptions in his first couple games, didn't get them. And in the last game of the 2022 season, that clearly should have been a pick. Tough, a little bit tough, but clearly should have made the pick against South Carolina. So that part's frustrating. I started to say he's number four on the team in tackles, and a lot of times tackle totals for guys in the secondary means they're making a tackle after a catch, but that is the life of a safety, and he needs to be a better tackler. I don't think that DJ Brown elevates Notre Dame's safety position, but it stabilizes it. I think the best way to say that, Pete.
Yeah, because it's like he's filling a void that wasn't going to be filled. You know, it's essentially like he's filling an open scholarship in a lot of ways, like Shuler or Minich. I mean, they were not going to come in and play right away. So, you know, to get him with Harper, he's 1,458 career snaps at Oklahoma State. Like, he's seen some things, you know, at least at the beginning of the season. Maybe Shuler shows up in November. I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't think anyone knows, but like, you give yourself a grace period at a minimum, and at a maximum, maybe DJ Brown rediscovers the form that he showed in the second half of the 2021 season, where when Kyle Hamilton went down, we're like, oh man, well, that's it for the secondary. And well, actually, DJ Brown played really well.
No, you're right.
Up until
you're
the bowl game. Right. So he's, you know, has he made a ton of plays? No, but like he's definitely stopped plays from being made, which is hard to evaluate with a safety. So yeah, I think it's somebody who helps. Both these guys help your defense. But if Sam Hartman is a home run, these guys are like line drive singles.
Yeah. And I would like to throw in Hillman, incoming freshman, who, again, he's going to have so much to learn about the safety position, but his skill set is really exceptional. If he's a really, really quick study, he might be a guy that can help right away. But yeah, O'Malley and I have probably underestimated DJ Brown, and it's helped stabilize an area that is not stable right now.
I'm glad Pete brought up last year because Tim, when you and I were going back and forth, I'm like, when I did my list, I adhered to what I tracked during the year, the drive MVP stuff. After two film reviews in a game, I wrote down if you were a key player on a drive every single time. DJ Brown's name only appeared four times. So I adhered to that when I was doing my listing. Now, the year before, it was twice that many in half the amount of games played. Right. So he did have a better year last year, or in 2021. And I think Notre Dame's coaches know they can get a little bit more out of him. And it's the weirdest no-brainer that it's not a big deal at all that DJ Brown comes back, but it's a no-brainer that DJ Brown comes back. You just don't have developed people there because you say, well, Watson, Henderson need to start. Okay, well, what happens when Henderson is in game six and he's worn down a little bit?
Well, Watts needs to start.
Yeah, Watts is a huge hitter that could get hurt too. What happens when Watts' shoulder comes out for one game because he drills someone? I mean, you need depth, and DJ Brown provides that coming back.
And you know, one of the things, again, I don't want to overplay this either, but one of the things that we don't take into account and many times don't know, you know, I mean, okay, DJ Brown had a very good second half of 2021. Maybe in 22, he was nicked up and he was playing nicked up the whole time. You know, we don't always know those kind of things either, but anyway, it's helped stabilize the back end of the defense. They still need help in the portal. We'll talk about that in second segment of questions. Last player we want to talk about here in segment one is Justin Adamolola, and Notre Dame really needed him to come back and play defensive end and start a defensive end and give them the consistency. He's never been a world beater, but he was a consistent presence for them and a guy that you knew was going to play his butt off every time he went out there. And it's a blow not having him come back and turning pro. I kind of sense that, you know, two twins, I think they've done the same thing their entire lives together. And Jason obviously was going pro, and Justin ultimately made that decision as well.
Very quickly, if you need DJ Brown back for depth, you needed Justin Adamolola back for starter and depth. That's a big deal. He was, I think, sixth on the defense in snaps last year, even though he was technically started out as Isaiah Foskey's backup. They played Justin Adamolola a lot, and it's not a shocking development, but it's an extremely unfortunate one because you needed a bunch of solid dudes up there, solid guys up there, because they don't have Foskey and they don't have dudes on the defensive end. Now, Jordan Botello, boy, was he a, holy cow, was he productive per snap, but it gets harder when you have to play every down.
Yeah, that sort of the storyline with Justin Adamolola was confusing to me, because I think that the three of us felt like Notre Dame needed to have him back, but I don't think Notre Dame felt like Notre Dame needed to
have him back. How is that possible?
I don't know. Maybe they know more things than we do.
Well, maybe Josh Burnham is about ready to explode. Maybe Aiden Gabeira is ready to make a consistent contribution. Tyson Ford, Ahrensberger. I mean, I don't know. If
that's true, maybe they should let those guys try to beat out 23-year-old Justin Adamolola on their football team, and then they can make the contribution.
that's how we look at it, but. Obviously they're up close to it, but I don't know how you can afford to not really recruit him to stay. And it doesn't, we'll get me into more of that in the second segment of questions about that, but it doesn't, on the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like that they did everything they could to get him back. And they continue to chase prospects in the transfer portal moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, we'll come back in segment two for Burning Up the Boards.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This is Mike Brown, former Notre Dame Leprechaun, here to share the Leprechaun's Game Day at Notre Dame, an officially licensed children's book that celebrates the magic of a football Saturday at Notre Dame. Follow me on an adventure from Step Off Under the Golden Dome to ND Stadium with this perfect gift for Fighting Irish fans. Visit www.lepgameday.com and enter Irish to get your author-signed copy today. Go Irish!
Here's another Irish tale from Dublin at dudublin.ie.
In 1916, Irish rebel forces have taken up position on the north side of Dublin's St. Stephen's Green Park. They exchange fire with the British to the south. Suddenly, a man enters the park with a brown bag above his head. Both sides cease fire. The park's groundskeeper has come to feed the ducks. For the next 6 days, there is a daily ceasefire so the ducks can be fed. Learn more when you do Dublin with Do Dublin Tours.
Segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question comes from Rich Irish 32. Many posters think adding Hartman leads to more receiver transfers that Notre Dame will become pass happy. I can't see this coming to fruition. Do you guys see Tommy Rees leaning to the pass more than rushing than running the football? The backfield is too talented to take carries away from them and opportunities away from them.
Well, I don't think they necessarily lean more toward the pass. What I think happens is that when in doubt, you don't hesitate to throw the football like you would, you know, throughout the 2022 season. Now, I think they'll throw more, but yeah, they have great running backs. They have the potential for a, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about the offensive line and it's going to be great. It will be, it has a chance to be very good, but you are replacing two really, really, I mean, I thought Jared Patterson had a great year, and I thought Josh Lugg, we addressed this last Tuesday, I thought he had a very good second half, three quarters of the season, but you're going to have to replace those guys with young people. But now to answer the question, I mean, I don't think you're necessarily taking carries away from the running backs. You know, Marcus Freeman, O-line, D-line driven, that hasn't changed. But with Sam Hartman, you don't hesitate for a moment to throw the football whenever you want to or need to.
You could be O-line driven and use that as pass protection. I mean, that counts too. I mean, Notre Dame was 110th nationally in pass attempts. So there's a lot of upward leeway there. It's not like they were throwing it 50 times a game and like, will they throw it 60 times a game? Like, Notre Dame didn't have a great pass offense. They didn't have a prolific pass offense. And now I think that they could have both. So it's maybe they'll play more up tempo. But if, also, you don't have Michael Mayer to take up a lot of those targets too, so you're spreading it around more. But I would like to see them run the ball less than they did this year, because they're going to be a hell of a lot better throwing it than they were last year.
I think they'll run a little. As you said, they're 110th. They will run less because they were 110th in pass targets. So a good team will be passing more than that. I don't get the first part of the question about bringing in wide receivers and going pass happy. I think you need to bring in wide receivers because you can't rely on four freshmen in case you get some injuries at wide receiver. Those guys might be really good right away. I don't know which freshman will be really good, but Tobias Merriweather, I thought, would catch 25 passes this year at this time in last year's, looking at the depth chart with six total wide receivers at the time. I thought Tobias Merriweather would catch 25 passes. He caught one. So I don't know what these four receivers are going to do. Bring in another wide receiver target is absolutely a good thing to do. Just stack talent on top of talent. It's okay to stack veteran talent instead of freshman talent. There's a story on the site right now by Kevin Sinclair about stacking talent. Let's stack transfer portal talent. It's proven. It's good. They're not going to go away. They're definitely not going to go away from the running game, but you have a guy that can hit the ball down the field much better than Tyler Buchner or Drew Pine.
Yeah, with regard to Merriweather, Tim, you thought 25 catches. He only had 8 targets, and he only caught one pass.
Yeah, I mean, in a year where I'm sure part of it was they didn't throw that much, as Pete said, and the quarterbacks weren't great, but who knows what's going to happen with 4 freshman wide receivers when you have Thomas, Colsey, Caleb Smith, Merriweather, perhaps Styles. Then you have 4 freshmen. I'd like to have one more veteran in there. I know Salerno's back, but he's not a big part of the passing game. He's a part of the running game. I'd like to have one more receiver come in.
If anything, Salerno will be less prominent.
Yeah, I think he was. If you go back and look at touchdowns, he's there blocking a lot.
Yeah,
but you can play him in 3rd and 2 as your blocking receiver instead of Merriweather. Those type of things.
All right, let's put it this way. I don't think scan offense will be necessary in 2023. With Sam Hartman as your quarterback. So you throw it 5 to 7 times more per game. You know, you're going to have more snaps per game and over the course of the season, because you're going to be a more productive overall offense. So I'm not worried about balance. The balance is built in with Sam Hartman's arrival, 2 or 3 really good running backs. And then hopefully they can find answers at offensive guard. And we talked about this last week. If you can find a starting offensive guard, you can bring him in.
Yeah.
Bring him in too.
I think about this. The Gator Bowl, there's 80 snaps. That's way more than Notre Dame has had recently. Most games, I mean. And they threw 32, 33 times, 34 times. If you count David Sherwood's ability to connect on deep passes on 4th down, that's a big one. That's right. Like 33 would be great with Sam Hartman all the time, because they are going to run the ball. You have Diggs, Estime, and as far as we know, you have Diggs, Estime, and Price.
Yeah, and you're not going to have to, you know, time of possession shouldn't be nearly as important as it was in most games. You're just going to view this differently than you did this past year, and I don't think it's going to be anything that you're going to be saying, wow, they're really throwing it way more than they used to. You should be good in both areas. So you accentuate both areas. You should score more points. And again, talking about the defense, they're probably going to have to score more points. You know, in 2021, Wake Forest averaged 41 points per game with Sam Hartman as their quarterback.
Yeah, I would just say if they average 33 pass attempts per game, so that'd be 390 for the season, then they would get all the way up to 76th nationally in pass attempts per game. So it's not, they're a long way away from just chuck it all over the place just because they got Sam Hartman. I mean, Wake Forest had 473 pass attempts this season. I don't think Sam Hartman is going to throw it nearly that much.
Nor will it be necessary. Yeah, there's a happy medium there. Question from Dashing Domer. Would you expect Hartman's completion percentage and number of interceptions thrown to improve in Notre Dame's offense? If so, to what extent?
Completion percentage, I don't care about. I expect it'll improve mildly, but I don't care about it as much as long as the yards per attempt indicate that they are attacking downfield.
I agree with you, Tim. Yes.
Yeah, this is not going to be, I hope this is not an offense where Sam Hartman's out there completing 70% of his passes because it remains horizontal and things like that. I don't want to watch that. So I'm just being selfish. If you have a quarterback that throws the ball downfield well, like Sam Hartman, and as Priester has pointed out, back shoulder throws really well in Sam Hartman, and you have Colsey and Merriweather and these guys coming up in the program, I want the throws downfield. The mid-range and depth throws where Pete will show us the chart with Pine and Buckner and all those things, it should look a lot different, Pete, than 70% of the completions being within 3 yards of scrimmage.
I don't think I'm going to be tracking air yards of target and coming up with like a 0.6.
Like, what game was that? What game?
Cal. I mean, that's the other thing with Sam Hartman is just like, if Notre Dame tried to play that way, that would be fine. He would have finished 21 of 21 in that game. You know, it's like, he's not going to overshoot Michael Mayer. He's not going to throw the ball at Lorenzo Styles' ankles. Like, any incompletions you would have been drops. So I want to see them push the ball vertical. I want to see more of like a Tyler Buckner style game where you're chucking it. And if you throw, like, maybe not with the 2 pick sixes and the 3 picks overall, but be aggressive with the football. And that's the thing. It's like Sam Hartman will have multi-pick games for Notre Dame this season. That's just how he plays.
That's the kind of quarterback he is. Yes. I mean,
I think Notre Dame's going to have to take that risk in part, probably because we're going to talk about in a minute. The defense is not going to hold them in games the way that it did last season. So Sam Hartman's going to have to be the one that holds them in games. He's going to have to be aggressive with the ball.
Yeah. When I say that's how he is, he thinks he can make the throw. And so sometimes he's going to, and again, he throws such a catchable ball and a back shoulder throw. If the DB plays it well, it's, you know, you're going to get some pick. But I think, and maybe I'm partly responsible for this in talking about his stats, he's a 59% career passer, but he was 63% this year. I think that's more pertinent than the career mark. What has he done lately? He was a 63% passer. He's certainly going to have way more time to throw the football. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Wake Forest was ranked in the 100s in sacks allowed in every year that he played at Wake Forest. So he's going to have with those two tackles, he's going to have more time to throw the football. The deep ball, Tim, you and I have talked about, you know, I think it's, and as you said, Pete, you're not going to be tracking how far the ball travels through the air. He's going to throw the ball downfield with big receivers, back shoulder throws. They can still run the football. I think he's more of a 63% passer than 59% passer. Everything, the arrow is pointing up here.
Next from Irish CFB 747. With Hartman coming in, do you see a true quarterback competition occurring between he and Buckner, or is Hartman starting a foregone conclusion? I find it interesting the staff opted for a dual threat in 22 and then went out and got an arm in the portal.
Well, that arm that they got in the portal had 11 rushing touchdowns in 2021. So it's not like he's not Buckner. Buckner's a sensational runner of the football. There isn't a competition here. I guess you do for Tyler Buckner. You want to keep him engaged. And I don't know.
There's a competition for Marcus Freeman and Tommy Rees, because if Tyler Buckner comes out and is twice the quarterback Sam Hartman is in the spring, if Tyler Buckner just looks way better than they're going to carry
the football,
I'm just saying, what if that happens? Then there's a competition. Like, you can't. Whenever we say there's no competition, it's like there's still a competition. I mean, if Justin Walters looked better than Kyle Hamilton in year two, they wouldn't be like, well, I didn't like him, so he's not playing. If Tyler Buckner does a 180 as a passer and runs like he does, they're going to be looking like, well, we have a problem.
I agree. And Tyler Buckner threw an interception once every 16 passes. Yes,
and I think that's why Sam Hartman's here, because they don't want Tyler Buckner to be the starter next year.
Although
over him.
Hartman's percentage is like once every 38 throws. So again, it's you want to keep Buckner engaged. And I don't know, is there an occasion where there's a package for Buckner? I don't really know why there would have to be. You'd still like to see Buckner. He was, again, sensational running the football.
He was.
And I thought Tommy Rees did a great job of calling his number when it was most appropriate to run it.
I want to ask you both, because I wrote about this a month ago before they got Hartman, when we figured they were going to get Hartman. What is your selling point to Tyler Buckner as Rees and Freeman? And if you're Tyler Buckner, what resonates with you and what doesn't in terms of staying to back up Sam Hartman and then having a chance to start your senior year?
Well, 2 years he goes into the next season with 3 years of eligibility. So there's 2 years of starting definitely waiting for them. If he can go out and he's got to beat out Minchie and Carr, a true freshman at that point.
So do you accept that when you're sold that as Buckner?
It's tough. I mean, here's a guy that he won the starting job this year, and you're going to tell him we're going to bring Sam Hartman in. It is difficult. He could walk into a starting job somewhere else in 2023 today. Wouldn't be a team projected to be at the very top of a conference at the end of the season, but I don't know. I hope he stays. I want him to stay. I want him to.
Yeah, me too. But I'm trying to put yourself. I'm putting myself in Buckner's shoes. So, NIL money helps. Pete, what happened? How do I sell you Tyler Buckner on staying?
Oh man, it's you know, what, his sister's coming here to play soccer? Like, it's, you know, there's got to be more to it than just the mercenary, am I playing or not playing? So it's got to be the extra stuff, you know, family stuff, working towards your degree stuff. You know, hey, do you make a promise to Tyler Buchner that you're not going to take a portal quarterback next year? I would want to know that if I was him.
Yeah.
Are you willing to say that if you're Marcus Freeman?
It's a promise you can make. You're going to lose one of your other quarterbacks with Carr coming in. You're not going to have Carr, Minchie, Buchner, and Jelly on the team for 2024. Can you tell him I'm not bringing a quarterback to start? You're our starter. Might want some depth.
At that point, Minchie's in his second year and Carr is on board.
Then you can probably just go with that.
So you can probably, I mean, you're going to be the starter in 24 unless you lose the job, unless you lose it.
Yeah. It's at that point, it's like, how much does Tyler Buchner enjoy Notre Dame, not just Notre Dame football? You know, so that's a tough question to answer. You know,
I think it's easy to stay in January through the spring, don't you? Because you're going to be here getting your grade. You want to get everything.
Maybe Tyler Buchner and Sam Hartman don't hit it off for some reason. Like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. But, like, you know, if Tyler Buckner's like, I'm just hitting pause on my career, like I'm not being developed here all of a sudden, like, then, you know, maybe you'd have a different opinion of it. I don't think that will happen. Like, it should. I'm not saying this is an easy sell to make, but it's almost an easy sell to make if you're Notre Dame. You still have a lot to offer if Buchner is sort of the mindset, yeah, I want to be here. How can we make this work for me?
And just to remind everybody, you know, I think we have a tendency to just focus on Notre Dame and their issues. And there are schools all across the country that are dealing with this kind of issue. Some are a little bit different than others, but I mean, transfer portal quarterbacks are coming in, and it's going to be difficult for most teams to hold on to their talent and to try to convince a kid to be patient. Your time's coming. That's where NIL comes in, especially NIL for a quarterback that you project as your starter in 24. Question from Mother Tucker 1, where does Notre Dame stand in the portal with areas of high need, including defensive end, defensive tackle, safety? When do we start getting nervous? It's a time question, guys.
Love the timings. I mean, I'd be nervous about the defensive line. We kind of outlined safety has 4 players now. Corner has 4 plus Christian Gray, who you would think could become Jaden Mickey played a lot of snaps. You would think Christian Gray could play a lot of snaps for Notre Dame next year. Does it move Clarence Lewis? The only way Clarence Lewis moves. Oh, and they do like Chance Tucker. We should point that out. The only way Clarence Lewis moves is A, if he can do the job at safety. He should get a look. Clarence Lewis should get a look at safety. Because if you have Christian Gray coming in and Mickey progresses, that's the other way. Mickey has to progress. They have to see in the spring Jaden Mickey's better than he was as a true freshman, which I think he will be.
Yeah, I think the defensive back, they're fine.
Yeah,
for now. I mean, there's nothing.
A safety that starts if you could.
Yeah, find one. They're okay at defensive back. You know, maybe they can reassess after spring practice, but for now, I think they're good. Defensive line, I wouldn't say that. As a rule, don't get nervous about next season on January 9th, but maybe something happens in spring practice with Botello, Ford, Ahrensberger. There are young guys, Burnham, Gobira, that maybe they look at and be like, oh, hey, we like the track that we're on here. This guy can be a contributor, 12, 15 snaps a game. Or maybe something happens in the spring, they're like, whoa, okay, we're not where we need to be here. The portal opens again in the summer. You take somebody then.
Can you afford to do that? Can you afford to wait that long? Because, I mean, you're mentioning all these young guys. I mean, physically, are they?
It's not a young player position.
Are they
a young player position?
Hold up. You know, I can't sit here and tell you I know everything about the 12 upcoming opponents. By the way, Notre Dame will be facing Brennan Armstrong next year.
And Robert and I.
You could drive to see him, Tim.
And Phil Jakovic.
Yeah, that's true.
Which will make things interesting. Yeah, you know, the defensive line, Bothroyd from Wake Forest chose Oklahoma, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
I keep hearing different opinions, mainly on our message board, about Bryce Vaughns, the defensive end from Utah State. You can't tell me that Notre Dame can afford not to go get that guy. I know he had 1.5 sacks. I don't know. Maybe he had no help along the defensive line and got double teamed all year. I don't know. What I do know is when I see him come off the snap of the ball, looks like there's some promise there. So you have to go try to get him. You need pass rushers.
But Tello needs a tag teammate in that spot. He will.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
He's 117 snaps, I think. Now, that dude made plays. If you include special teams,
we can't emphasize enough how important it is that Jordan Batella becomes a significant presence week after week after week. It's right there for him, man.
Still think he's better off not playing Foskey number snaps and has a teammate that helps him out at that position.
Well, no. I mean, granted, yeah, you can't go from this to that quickly. But you know what I'm talking about. He needs to be. Oh, he can't disappear for 4 games at a time because he's not assignment correct or whatever the reasons were that he has not been on the field more frequently.
He had a good day in the Gator Bowl, didn't you think? And Simon Hughes,
absolutely. But he will now be entering his 4th year in a program. They need a consistent Jordan Batella. I agree. You can't take Foskey snaps or anything along those lines. Probably not even Justin Adamolola snaps, but yeah, they need him. Anthony Lucas, his situation coming out of Texas A&M is just, it's not a realistic expectation for him to come to Notre Dame, correct? Would you agree with me?
I would just hide under a bunch of coats and hope the problem goes away and let him come in. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I don't know. That does not project well in recruiting when you're going against Texas A&M. I'm not sure why it would project well when you're going in the transfer portal and looking at a guy from Texas A&M.
What about Agofu? Does he want to come back? Do you want him back? And is he any more impactful than Nana Osafo-Mensah, who I don't, speaking of another guy that they really need to take a step up, but I don't know that he has the skill set to really take a huge step up.
I mean, the best guy that could have helped Osafo-Mensah was Justin Adamiola being his tag teammate. That one's already gone. That was a really nice looking strong sign for me. I don't know. The Agofu thing is weird. It'd just be weird to come back. It's happened before. We talked about it. Who's the quarterback in the 80s? Was it Carter? Who'd I talk about this?
Everything's weird, Tim. Tyler
Grooms.
Yeah. Was a red shirt. Went from a sophomore to a red shirt freshman.
That was awesome.
Over the course of the whole game. It's craziest.
It's strange. I don't know. If he wants to come back, he's a 6th year player that would help Jordan Batello. But he's not. I don't think he's better than Batello.
No, but a tag team.
No, I know.
Talking about a tag team.
They put themselves in this position where they have some young guys there, but those young guys are theoretical. Every guy you name is theoretical. If you're saying, well, Burnham's going to help, Gobira's going to help, they were scout team players.
Among the freshmen, who are early enrollees on the defensive line?
Oh, God. Kevin Sinis. Sinclair Sinis.
I got a list here. You got that handy? You guys talk through bad radio here, and then we'll have it. On the defensive line, just Houston and Bowen. Now, Drake Bowen's a guy that he's physically and mentally
linebacker.
So Houston's the only defensive line.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was thinking Vernon. So only Houston. Yeah. I was thinking of Vernon. When I said Drake Bowen, I was thinking of Vernon.
Speaking of Brandon Vernon, that kid looks pretty good physically. Wish he was coming in early, but I get
it. That's what I do too.
I get why he's not, but by the time he arrives this summer, physically, that could be a guy that maybe you can look. They've played freshman defensive linemen here in recent years. Maybe Brandon Vernon can be one of those guys. I don't know. I mean, they probably need him more inside than outside, but I don't know. They need them both, but physically, if you looked at the stuff from the All-Star game that Tom Loy was at all week, looks pretty good.
I also think mentally he looks pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. You watch interviews with Brandon Vernon. I like where his head is. He's a very confident guy and, you know, doesn't expect anything handed to him, fully expects to have to come in and prove himself. Love those kind of kids. I'm getting my hopes up, man. I'm getting my hopes up about
so much so that I turned him into Drake Bowen when I was reading.
I'm getting my hopes up that when he comes in and is a guy that you can play, you know, what are we talking about again? 12, 15 snaps. If he's better than that, fantastic. A couple more defensive line questions. Indy Squid 23, L. Washington is taking some heat on the boards. What is your assessment of Washington as a D-line coach, both as a recruiter and a developer of talent at the position?
The recruiting thing is tough because I don't think Al Washington is why Keon Keeley is not at Notre Dame.
Right.
So I wouldn't go that way. I like the four players they brought in the defensive line in his first haul. I had Notre Dame's defensive line as its number one unit by a wide margin coming into the season, and I absolutely did not have that to be the case exiting the season.
Yeah, I thought as a recruiter, good job.
Yep.
I like Traore a lot.
I think,
you know, Vernon, I think, has got a chance to be very, very good. So it's, yeah, that was a good defensive line class. As a developer of the position, you know, was Foskey a dominant player this year? Sometimes. You know, Riley Mills' seasons was not what I expected at all. So I don't know. I would agree with what O'Malley said. I think the defensive line looked better at the beginning of the season than it did at the end.
I would say that Osafa Mensah improved. Again, more so first half of the year than second. I don't know if that's fair or not. Rubio was a consistent contributor, right, Tim?
He was.
Productivity per snap was really good. So I want to be fair about this. I'm not sure that we can, I don't think that we can fully judge Al Washington as a defensive line developer after 1 year. But
next January, when we see Gobira, Burnham, Tui Halamaka, right, and these guys, we can a little bit.
Right. I was going to say, but I share some of the same concerns. I do.
You know,
I don't really know what's fair, to be honest. And what I mean, the basis of everything we do at Irish Illustrated is to tell the truth and to be fair in doing it.
I know Foskey was not the Justin Tuck, Alan Page defensive end we were kind of hoping for this year. But other than not forcing all the fumbles, he forced 6 fumbles 2 years ago. That's incredible. He did have 14 tackles for loss. That's the most since Sheldon Day had 15 and a half 7 years prior. He finished second in drive MVPs for me to Bertrand by 1. And he led the team in sacks, tackles for loss, block punts, and quarterback hurries. He was not a complete game wrecker 10 times like you thought he would be.
Yeah. One more D-line. Anything else on that, guys? Oh, yeah. One more D-line question. We'll move on to some other things. And that is from Maltese Irish, as I mentioned in segment 1. Can you provide any insight on Justin Adamoloz's decision to leave and or Aiden Kianana's status, both injury-wise and transfer rumblings? Excuse me.
The Adamolola thing will always be confusing. I think there was not a hard enough full-court press to get him back. Maybe there's an assumption he's leaving because he's a 6-year player and his brother's leaving. And he's also, you know, Justin Adamolola, I think, will play in the NFL, but as an undrafted free agent. And if Justin Adamolola came back to Notre Dame, he would play in the NFL as an undrafted free agent after next season. That could have been his deciding factor. He gets a grade back and they're like, your grade is stay in school. Well, I'm a 6th-year senior. Maybe next year his grade
would have been stay in school.
You're right. It would have been the exact same thing. But I think he'd be better off in Notre Dame uniform. And I think they could have had Justin Adamiola back is the best way to say it. Full court press. I think Justin Adamiola is back at Notre Dame.
Pete.
Yeah, I agree with that. Aiden Kanaan, like, still here. I think that he probably will battle to, like, go through spring and be like, I can do this. But, you know, coming back from the ACL, that was like the first spring practice, right?
It was very early, at least.
I don't think there's a physical issue unless he's had a setback. Unless he had a setback in November, I don't think there's a physical issue with him.
I think to have a year removed from the ACL going into spring practice and like cut it loose and show what you got. I think that's just sort of where things stand. He's a younger player with who hasn't played a lot at a position where they have, I think, not a ton of guys similar to him, but you know, we're not talking about somebody who's 6'5" with a huge reach. Like he's kind of a straight nose. So it's I think he goes into spring with probably a lot to prove.
They need a straight nose. They need, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just do. Don't, O'Malley and I talked about this last week, Pete. I just don't know why you think you can afford to do without him. I don't think you can.
I think it's totally false. I don't think you can. I don't think you can do without it, KNII, right now.
Yeah, he won
the job over Romeo.
He won a goal line job two springs ago.
Yeah.
I hope he comes back. That's my perspective on it. And Benny Boy, why do you think the bottom of the depth chart players in Notre Dame are still here rather than hitting the transfer portal? Now I'm going to throw some names out here. We've kind of like avoided saying them, but you know, guys that are in that position that are heading into their junior year that haven't made an impact. Justin Walters, Philip Riley, Tucker, we know that he's been elevated and they like Ryan Barnes, Schweitzer, who's had some injuries, Carmody, certainly Caleb Johnson. Certainly Rocco Spindler falls into that category. Tosh Baker,
the backup specialist too. You're not going to have.
Right. Why haven't they entered their names in the portal yet? It's a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question, but I think it's not like they're, I mean, Sam Hartman just went to Notre Dame. He's the number one, he's the Athletic's number one ranked player in the whole portal. These are not obvious landing spots for these guys right now either. I think you could vet where you're going to go. You should be prudent about it. Vet where you're going to go. Give yourself some options. You could also stay in school at Notre Dame for a semester.
Well, to be fair, their names aren't in the portal, but they probably have a pretty good idea of who would be interested in them.
I think I'm surprised there aren't more now, but we know there are going to be plenty, about 10. But let me put it this way, since we're saying names, Philip Riley wasn't at the bowl game. Something has to go wrong for you not to be at the bowl game. He's not in the transfer portal. Isn't that weird? No.
Yeah, right.
That's weird.
The way we correct me if I'm wrong here, Pete Sampson. I mean, the way we understand it, if they want to stay at Notre Dame and get a degree,
you can do that.
Yeah, and as long as you're in good standing with everything, yes.
And probably not play football for Notre Dame.
No, correct.
That's not a possibility, right? So it's like there's not a rush.
I don't know why this is the only time we have to worry about a timeline with the bottom end of the portal.
Yeah, but aren't you like Tio? I know you put out a scholarship chart, and I mean, you want to talk about what did I say? The water under the bridge to flow between now and the roster in the fall is like a rampaging river. There's so much to happen, but I'm surprised there aren't more in the portal. I think you just said you are. Are you, Pete Sampson?
I guess I. But I'm just sort of like I don't really have a reaction to it at all. I mean, it's just like time will take care of it. And the players who ultimately I think move on will be the ones that weren't playing at Notre Dame in the first place. So they're, you know, in terms of a Notre Dame football themed podcast, probably not guys who we're going to talk a lot about.
I think the questions about this that are being asked are more of a scholarship number question, like how are they going to get down?
That is absolutely not a problem how they're going to get down. They've had the conversations with about 8 to 10 of the people we mentioned what their future is. I'm surprised some aren't in the portal. As Pete Sampson has said 7 times this year, Jack Cohn came to Notre Dame after the national championship game, which is tonight. There'll be more portal stuff going on in the next couple of weeks. I would have guessed at least 3 to 4 more names were already in the portal, to be fair to the question. And the It's a good question, because I would have at least figured 3 more names that have not gone in yet would be in by now, but it's just a timing.
Yeah, timetable question.
Question
from I keep saying that. We on the outside putting a timetable on things on the inside is an exercise in futility most of the time. Question from RKID001. Who on the Notre Dame staff is tasked with monitoring the portal? Does each position coach bear that responsibility for his position group, or is there a, quote, GM-like role on the staff?
In the past, like, you know, Brian Poling would do it. Your recruiting coordinator would handle it. I don't know if Chad Bowden manages that. I mean, the portal is just, it's there. But I think we've talked about this in the past. Like, if you're looking at the portal, hitting refresh, hoping like, oh, there's a defensive lineman, like, you've already lost. Like, you need to know who's going into the portal before they go into the portal. Like, Notre Dame needed to know Sam Hartman was interested in coming to Notre Dame before Sam Hartman said, I'm entering the transfer portal. So I think it's, you know, is that Bowden because he's the recruiting coordinator? Probably has a lot to do with it. The position coaches, I think they got to pound the pavement too and be like, okay, who's out there? Is this somebody I recruited? Is this somebody who I know who recruited? Is this somebody who I have a colleague who may be coached? You sort of got to call all sources on this stuff.
Why wouldn't Bill Reese be involved in this?
Yeah, Bill Reese too. Yeah.
I mean, that's what he does. He looks at
scouting,
looks at opponents. He looks at recruits. I have to imagine he's involved with this as well. Tim,
yeah, he's the talent evaluator. That was my number one.
Okay.
Right. That was, he's, I think he's,
yeah, but again, of, not, I mean, I would imagine that every position coach is responsible for looking at, or I mean,
yeah, like, and Marcus Freeman's got a pretty big role in it now, right? Freeman has a big role in it right now. He's got the time to do it now. This is his time to hit it.
You're talking about
Marcus Freeman.
But I would think every position coach would be. Yeah. Wouldn't Al Washington want to know what's out there? You would think he would. Question from Tim, I know you're short on time here, and I'm trying to get if you have to leave, I want to get to the last question before.
I'm fine. I'm good.
You have to. Okay, very good. Jason SCSM, who do you feel was the most underappreciated player in the 2022 season? I think I threw out a name last week.
Who was your name last week?
Yeah, you said Josh Lugg. I think that
I said Josh Lugg. Absolutely. And I stand by that. I thought he was really, really good the second half of the season. The exception I said was USC, and everybody didn't really perform up to their level of expectation of themselves.
Doing our top 40, Tim.
Yeah. Well, if I can't say Josh Lugg, I'll go with,
you would Jack agree Kizer. With that. You're saying,
I think Josh Lugg is very underappreciated. Jack Kizer. I'll throw him out.
I'm going to go ahead and say Pete is actually correct on an opinion. It's hard to be correct on an opinion, Pete, but you're right. Are you ready? All right. Jack Kizer. 22 stuffs, one less than Isaiah Foskey on 240 fewer snaps. 5 more than Marcus Leifau on 310 fewer snaps.
Wow.
Jack Kizer, not that he should have played more at Rover because he was subbed out for Tariq Bracey, who was better than Jack Kizer, to be fair to the coaching staff right now, but Jack Kizer could have helped at will when Maris Leifau had 310 more snaps and led the defense in snaps. Per play, Jack Kizer makes plays, and he always has. He always has. Wow. Now, maybe is not big enough to go slamming into the line. That is part of run defense, is filling your gap and being able to mark. Leifau's a physical dude. But Jack Kizer, think about those numbers on that many fewer snaps.
Yep.
That's really impressive. But the most underappreciated player is JD Bertrand. I just don't think that's even real.
Yeah, but since he won MVP, I decided not to use him.
Okay,
yeah.
That's
he can't be underappreciated. He's the MVP.
Well, on the inside, on the outside. Those numbers for Jack Kizer are really, really impressive. And frankly, as we launch our top 40 here today and count down for the next 6 days, I underrated Jack Kizer. See, throughout the course of the season, I should pay more attention to those stats that you keep, but I have 8.3 million things to do. Over the course
of it's better to come from different. It's better to come from different points of view on these topics.
I think both those guys are tremendously underrated. How about somebody off the beaten path that maybe we? How about Zeke Correll and the kind Carell's of game he ended up having?
Yeah, Zeke Correll's good. Botello can't be underrated because he's beloved by heart message boards. So it's not him.
Yeah.
He per play, Botello made a lot of
Howard Cross is probably a little underappreciated. Not to the extent of those guys.
Can you say Drew Pine or is that like verboten now?
Well, tough because there's so
I rated him higher than you did, T.O.
Yeah. So Pete, I want to read this to you. This is where we're running over our top 40 here. Here's what happened with Drew Pine. He was bad, Marshall, worse, Cal, fine, Cal in the second half, great, North Carolina, very good, BYU, horrible, Stanford, did his job, UNLV, not good, Syracuse, was present in a victory, Clemson, great, Navy, impossibly bad, Navy, did his job against BC, and then I thought good against USC. I don't know where to rate that.
Yeah, I know. You made it sound like he was horrible against BYU. You meant against Stanford.
Yeah, I put BYU very good, horrible.
Okay, Stanford.
My fault.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that. But yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, you know, we were, when he was bad, we said he was bad. When he was good, he was good. You know, I think what we try to do is remove our emotion from it and just try to evaluate what happens on the field and what he does. And when he was bad against Stanford, I felt like people threw the North Carolina BYU game away. Well, they happened and he was good and they were good.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was bad against Stanford. He was bad. Everybody was bad against Stanford. He was bad against Stanford. So we just try to evaluate it at face value. And yeah, I agree with you, Pete. I think he was underrated. Yeah.
Clarence Lewis, too. Also underrated.
Clarence Lewis, too, as well. Okay, we have a basketball question. Then we're going to talk about the national championship game real quick. Long question from Jay Maresco. Since you have stated there will be a coaching change in men's basketball, I guess I did definitively state that. And I probably shouldn't state it as definitively as I have. I just can't imagine that there won't be. What will the next 2 to 4 months look like? Will Mike Bray announce his retirement before the end of the season? Given the current roster, the 23-24 season will be a rebuild. Finding a new coach quickly will be crucial. Do you think the process of finding a new coach has started? And last question, do Starling and Lubin transfer? We need to address all those things.
Starling and Lubin transferring is always possible when you're losing Mike Bray. Bray as your coach, it's certainly possible. Everybody transfers in college basketball. And when you lose your coach, there's a good chance you transfer. They have to find a way to retain those two. Otherwise, I don't know what the new coach will be doing next season because he won't be coaching a basketball team. I think the process of finding a new coach has not anywhere near officially started because I don't think we should 100% act like Mike Bray's announcing retirement during the season. I don't think that's
nor should he. I don't believe in that. That's unfair to him. I know some people will disagree with this. I don't think that that serves any purpose. I don't want him to do that personally. The rebuild is going to be huge. The number of transfers to be brought in is upward of 5, I think. Because look at all the guys you're losing. They really need to hold on to Starling and Lubin. That would be catastrophic. I think the process has started to some degree. And again, we're not in a position to say that Mike Bray definitively is not going to be back. I hate to even talk about this to the extent that we are, because we all love the guy so much personally, but there needs to be a change. He's a very self-aware guy. I would imagine that he sees the writing on the wall because, you're doing this with a very veteran basketball team and the turnover and the number of transfers that are going to be needed is huge. And I think all these things are in play. Help me out here. I'm I'm drowning.
I pretty much agree
now.
With everything that you said. They're in a bad spot. They're in a really bad spot with basketball right now, and there's not an easy way out of it. There really is not. I know basketball teams can get good right away. I think Notre Dame's, man, it's going to be a multi-year turnover after this season, I think.
Yeah, they haven't been getting destroyed. You know, I mean, they've lost 2 1-point games. They lost, but, you know, the only thing they flirted with against North Carolina was to cover the spread, and they didn't do that.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, they're not conference games. They weren't good when they won.
Except for Michigan State, when that, I don't even know how that, other than Michigan State was
down
their demand at that time.
Best players and played 5 games in 2 days or something.
No doubt. And Notre Dame played, so one time where you could say Notre Dame played 40 minutes of defense, but they're not going to do that again. And it's not going to get better. They have a game against Georgia Tech at home tomorrow night. Georgia Tech has been inconsistent, but has reached up and bit a couple teams. It's all in play, and we anticipate something like that happening. A guy's name that has come up, and now I see other people are saying it, Sean Sweeney, who has no head coaching experience on the collegiate level, but he is a big-time 38-year-old NBA assistant who's going to be a head coach at some point soon, revered within the NBA for his defensive acumen. The go-getter that he is. I don't know if that's going to be realistic. There are other coaches out there at Drake and College of Charleston who obviously have some college experience doing it. But Sweeney's an interesting guy what makes it even more interesting is he owns a house in South Bend, because the Irish Catholic that grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, is a big Notre Dame football fan and Notre Dame fan in general, and would probably take the job at Notre Dame if offered. But, you know, he doesn't. Is Jack Swarbrick looking for a college coach with experience? Probably, because that's what he was looking for in football when the program was in bad shape, when the job was given to Brian Kelly, who had tons of college experience.
That would be interesting, because, I mean, Marcus Freeman earlier this year was in Dallas for an alumni event and spent time with the Mavericks.
Spent time with Sean Sweeney at that time, yes.
Yeah, I mean, mostly with Jason Kidd, but Sean Sweeney was there. Yeah.
But he's Jason Kidd's, not to diminish the other coaches on the staff, but when Jason Kidd has, I don't know if I've said this on a podcast, but when he's had A, COVID, and B, kicked out of a game, Sean Sweeney has been the acting head coach at that time. He's a really, really, really sharp guy and an interesting name, but I understand that there are more proven coaches out there, and so we'll see what happens with this. Okay, last question. O'Malley has had to evacuate, and he's given me his answer to the question, which is from IndyFan08. Are you guys taking or laying the 13 points tonight in the national championship game?
I am laying them.
I don't know if 13 is – there are various numbers. Excuse me, Pete.
Yeah.
14.
I saw 13.5 last night. I thought about going for Georgia at that. As I look at FanDuel right now, it's still at 13.5. If I was going to make up a wager, which I might, not committing to it, I would take Georgia minus 13.5.
Yeah, I think anytime you get above 13.5, that's when you... And hey, look, I was blown away by how TCU played against Michigan and how, frankly, how poorly Michigan played, but TCU had a lot to do with that. O'Malley says he's going to lay the points at 13.5. I would anticipate I'm going to do the same thing. TCU's running back is banged up. Not that that necessarily sways me one way or another, but I would imagine at 13.5, I will lay the points as well. Looking forward to it. Always look forward to the national championship game. And then we turn the page at that point. It truly becomes the 2023 season at that point. So, Pete, thanks. Glad to have you back. And to our listeners, thank you for listening once again. We'll be back on Monday, January 16th, I believe, unless there's a reason to change that. Now, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.